Blog Talk Radio. Draft special. With your host, me, Vito, and we're having some technical difficulties with the show right now as we're trying to do it live on Ustream, also as well as on Blog Talk Radio. We're trying to do both at the same time here. And Brett will post the link to the show, which is also airing live or streaming live on Ustream right now, when he gets a chance, onto our show page on BTR. And no one is on the show right now with us, but we will be joined shortly in the next 5 minutes or so by Hunter Ansley of DraftZoo.com. Who will be along to break down each and every single pick that the bloggers and beat writers who call in to tonight's show make with their selections. And it will be a mock draft of picks 1 through 10 on tonight's edition. Latest edition of Sports Talk Soup. Hunter Ansley and Joe Everett will be along shortly, as previously mentioned, to analyze and give a grade on each of those first 10 picks, the selections that beat writers and bloggers of the teams with these picks make on our mock draft, which will take up the first hour and a half of tonight's edition of Sports Talk Soup. But you know what? Play a commercial for us right now while we try to get someone else on to the show to talk with us tonight about the NFL draft. So we'll get underway the mock draft approximately at 10:10 p.m. Eastern time at the latest. But before that, we'll play a commercial. Brett, feel free to pick which one you like.
You've seen them talk on Twitter. You've seen the articles around the web. Now, hear them live. It's the Twitter Fantasy Football Roundtable on the Fantasy Sports Channel on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Jim Day. You know him as Fantasy Taz on Twitter. Go ahead, give him a tweet. Now, here's your host, Jim Day.
Well, Brett, we won't ask you to do that again. You just played the intro for the Twitter Roundtable show, which also broadcast live here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network on BTR. With guys such as Jim Day is one of the co-hosts of that great fantasy football show on BTR. You can catch him periodically on Sports Talk Soup, too. But on tonight's show, this edition of Sports Talk Soup, we will have a mock draft once again of the first 10 picks of this year's NFL draft. And beat writers and bloggers of those respective teams will join me to give their selections in this year's NFL draft. Hunter Ansley of DraftZoo.com, and then also Joe Everett of the Fantasy Exchange and RookieDraft.com will also join me later on the show to give analysis and a breakdown as well as a grade for each and every single one of those picks given tonight on our mock draft show. Now we got a big Panthers fan along with us for the show tonight. And let's hear what he has to say right now about the Panthers selecting Cam Newton with the number one overall pick.
I think it's a great pick. Go Cam.
Was really great insight, guys. Expert analysis. Was not at all. Sorry for that lack of great insight there. I thought he was going to provide us with some lively banter there for me and him to go off on. Discussing the Panthers selecting Mr. Cam Newton, the former Auburn quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner who led his team, the Auburn Tigers, to a BCS national title in last year's college football season. And an undefeated season also for the Auburn Tigers. Cam Newton is just one of the many potential first-round selections this year from the Auburn Tigers. As we could also see Nick Fairley, the D lineman, coming off the board real early. But Cam Newton going number one, I don't know if I'm convinced enough right now that he's ready to be an elite franchise passer at this moment. I don't think you can just put him in right now and expect him to lead you to victories. I don't think he is well enough along to do that for an NFL franchise right now. He needs time to develop and possibly time on the sideline under the tutelage of a veteran quarterback. But enough of that for right now, as we have a caller, actually, that has joined us on the show tonight, and I believe it is Hunter Ansley of DraftZoo.com. Hunter, welcome to the show.
Hey, Vito, this is Joe.
And you know what? It's not Hunter, but it's my other good football friend here, Joe Everett. Joe, what's up?
Pleasure to be on, Vito. I'm sorry I couldn't call in earlier. I just got off the Fantasy Exchange there, my other fantasy football podcast every Wednesday. But other than that, 48 hours or less than 24 hours away from the draft, Fido, I'm pretty fired up. Content over at rookiedraft.com is just firing away. So I'm ready to talk a little NFL draft, sir.
And he is Joe Everett, not only of the Fantasy Exchange, but most importantly right now during the NFL draft season, also of rookiedraft.com. So I did remember to present you as part of that great website this time around, Joe.
Well, you know, a lot of hard work going into the site right now. I've got my final top 100 players posted. Mock draft is final. The issue has just been put out there. So no more additions. All good things must come to an end, Vito. But the best news is by this time tomorrow, we'll know the fate of a lot of franchises' first-round picks.
And the latest news surrounding the Panthers and their number one overall pick, Joe, is them taking former Auburn quarterback and Heisman Trophy winner Cam Newton. And I was saying before you came on, Joe, that I'm not too confident right now that he can be a franchise QB starting next season for an NFL franchise. What's your take on that, Joe? I still think he needs time to develop. There's stuff to his game that needs time for refinement right now.
Well, I would agree that he's not ready to lead a team into in the playoffs per se. I do think he has some qualities to be a serviceable quarterback at the time. And, you know, I look back at, and no, this is not a knock on Joe Flacco, but you're talking about another very raw quarterback prospect who had great physical attributes and a cannon of an arm. But, you know, where did Flacco come from? Delaware. Look at the level of competition. How big is the stage he played on? I mean, I'm a little more confident, I think, than most people in Cam Newton's ability not only to lead a team, but also to take his opportunity seriously. And I think that what people really have to focus on is what Cam did just last season, and also through his career at Blinn. He did all the work off the field. He took his teammates and made them not only into friends, but allies. I mean, he really made a great bond, I think, with his teammates, and that's what a great quarterback does. He's not only a leader on the field, but also off it.
So you're saying because of the competition he faced, very tough competition in the SEC, going up against the likes of Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, those type of teams have been a great test for him and have proven to you that he can get it done at the next level then and lead an NFL franchise to the promised land eventually. Maybe not in his first season because not just his fault, but also because of the lack of talent that will be surrounding him with his team in his rookie season, correct?
Well, absolutely, and also depending on how well he's supported and what the talent like him around him is. You look at how Flacco was able to succeed. Well, they had a good defense. They had a good running game. What does Carolina have? Well, they don't have necessarily a great defense, but they do have a very strong running game. It's not too far off to think that Cam might have some success as long as they keep it simple for him.
So you think then that this is the right pick for the Panthers to take with their number one overall selection? If you were the Panthers GM in this situation, you would go with Cam Newton and put all this stock into him as your franchise QB by taking him with the number one overall selection in this year's draft.
I would say yes, but on two provisions. Number one, you can't find a trade partner to trade out. I think ultimately your ideal situation would be to trade this pick away and get the extra picks, because let's face it, Vito, Carolina needs a lot of different pieces to this puzzle to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately what they would like is to garner more picks. So, but unfortunately, this isn't one of the years that that is a plausible theory. I mean, just because of how difficult things are, you can't trade players. All you can trade is future year's draft picks and this current year's draft pick. So I think that makes it even more difficult to make a transaction on the open market there. I mean, draft picks aren't as tradable as they were in years past just because of how gummed up things are due to the NFL labor situation. So I think, yes, in the situation they're in, this is the wisest pick at current just for the simple fact that he's going to put butts in the seats. That's the bottom line. We saw the impact that a Tim Tebow made in Denver. I think Cam could make that similar impact. Is it the perfect decision? I'm not so sure I would do it in that given chance. I mean, I might be enticed to take A.J. Green, but that's just me. I'm a little A.J. Green crazy. He's my favorite.
You would take a wide receiver with the number one overall pick? You'd be crazy enough thinking he's that elite of a wide receiver, Joe, to take him that high? I mean, that's extremely high for a wide receiver. You better
Absolutely.
Be an elite wide receiver, probably a top three, not just a top five, but a top three, and eventually the number one wide receiver in the game if you're going to take him that high. Now, you regard him that highly, Joe, A.J. Green.
Yes, I do. And let's look at the last wide receiver taken first overall. That would be Keyshawn Johnson, made by Pat Kerwin, I believe, was the GM of the New York Jets at the current point in time. Bottom line, though, I strongly believe he is not only a better pro than what Keyshawn Johnson was or could have been if he didn't have his head up as you-know-what, but I think A.J. Green is the best wide receiver to come out since Calvin Johnson, who is a fellow you know a little bit about being in the Detroit area.
Yes, I do, Joe, and I want to move on now to the team, Tennessee Titans, who hold the number 8 pick, Joe, in this year's draft? I believe they do, correct?
Yes, sir.
And we have a blogger on with us right now who covers the Tennessee Titans, I believe for the SB Nation blog, Music City Miracle. Is Jimmy with us right now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Jimmy, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for asking. Now, I want to start off, Jimmy, by talking about how the Titans certainly did not have a great season in 2010. They endured a last-place finish in the AFC South, going 6-10 largely because of their QB struggles. With three men, including the veteran Kerry Collins, the perplexing Vince Young, who will not be back, supposedly, in 2011, and the rookie who was a little bit rusty, to say the least, in Rusty Smith, as their QBs. Now, there's a lot of debate surrounding the Titans, whether, because of their struggles, talking about these quarterbacks, whether they should take a QB with their first-round draft pick. Jimmy, what's your take on that?
I don't think they should. I think that more than likely Cam Newton and Blaine Gabbert are both off the board. I don't really like either of those guys anyway, and especially not at 8. This team has a lot of holes other than quarterback, and I mean, if you're going to take a guy at 8, you better be sure that he is going to be your franchise guy, because if not, I mean, you're just shooting yourself in the foot for another 5 years like they did with Vince Young. So, if I'm them, I either take the best defensive player available on the board, or see if, you know, there's a deal to move back. I mean, everybody always says that's what the team should do, is trade down, but there's a team being willing to trade up with them. But I mean, those are two things that I would look at if I were making this decision for the Titans.
And what other positions do they need help at right now, Jimmy?
Well,
and
they need help on the defensive line
with this pick.
They need help on the defensive line. Their defensive tackles are undersized, and they were banged up a lot last year. I mean, they got Jason Jones, who's a really good player when he's healthy, but he's been banged up a lot. And there's some talk that they might even move him to defensive end this next year. He played defensive end in college. They moved him to defensive tackle, and they took him. Jim Washburn liked the smaller, quicker tackle inside, but Washburn is no longer there. Chuck Cecil, same way, he's no longer there. Jerry Gray wants his defensive ends to be a little bit bigger to play a different technique. So there's talk they may move him outside. They've got Tony Brown, who's been a good player, but he's got a bad knee. Never could get it right last year, and don't really see any reason to believe that he would be able to this year either. So they need a big defensive tackle. Obviously, Nick Fairley would fill
that
role.
You mean they're going defense with this pick?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's been talk that, you know, if A.J. Green were to fall that far, if Julio Jones is on the board there, I would definitely look at those two guys if I were them, but I would suspect they go defense.
Now, with their quarterback difficulties last season, they have to obtain one in this year's draft, correct? But you're saying they won't do it with their first round selection. So how about their second round draft pick, Jimmy? Is that where they will target their future franchise passer, you think, in this year's draft? And if so, who do they target? Who do you see falling to them with their second rounder, Jimmy?
Well, I mean, obviously it's impossible to tell, but there's been reports this week they like Andy Dalton. I think they really like Jake Locker too, but if they don't take him at 8, they're probably not going to get him. I mean, they would have to trade back into the first round to get him, and they may do that. I mean, a lot of this is going to depend on where the quarterbacks go. Like I said at the beginning, we all think that Newton and Gabbert are probably going in the top 5 or 6. The next guy to go is more than likely going to be Jake Locker. There's talk that the Redskins like him at 10. The Vikings need a quarterback at 12. There's talk that the Dolphins might be looking quarterback 15. Jaguars might be looking quarterback 16. So, you know, if one of those teams takes Locker, then I think the teams, like the Bengals, the Bills, that maybe don't get the Cardinals, if they don't get a quarterback in the first round, I think if once the third guy goes, I think that, you know, teams are going to kind of sit up and pay attention. Once the fourth guy goes, whether it be Ryan Mallett, or there's been a lot of talk about Andy Dalton in the last couple of days, last week or so. Once that fourth guy goes, then if he goes early in the first round, mid 15, 20, 25, something like that, then I think you're going to see teams panic a little bit and maybe try to trade back up into, the late 20s to get their guy. So that could be something that the Titans want to do. I mean, it would depend on the price. I don't think they're going to want to give up next year's first-round pick. But it shouldn't take that. They've got an extra fourth and an extra seventh. So they've got a little bit of room to maneuver there. But I think they probably would love to sit at 39 and hope that a guy like Andy Dalton, maybe a Christian Ponder, falls into their laps.
So you have the Titans selecting Nick Fairley, the D lineman from Auburn, with this 8th overall pick of the Titans then?
Yes. That's the way that I think it'll play out. They've got Tracy Rocker, who was his defensive line coach at Auburn. So they're going to know more about Nick Fairley than any other team that's on the clock in the first round of the draft. So, I think if Rocker has given them the thumbs up on Fairley, then I think that's where they go.
So, Jimmy has selected Nick Fairley with the 8th overall selection of this year's NFL draft. Joe Everett, now, analyze and give a grade for that draft pick. Was it a wise choice made by Jimmy going with Nick Fairley?
Well, if it's not an A, it's an A+. I mean, not only did you mention the Coach Rucker, who's worked with him before, but also Fairley's high praise for the coach. I was at the combine, and Fairley just could not stop talking about the commitment they both made to last season, and just him becoming a more devoted player. And I think ultimately, guys, we're talking about very young men, all right? And not a lot of guys at that age are very committed to much of anything besides, partying or doing much of, it's a college atmosphere. I think Fairley has done a lot of maturing in the last couple of years, and really he's a guy that has taken some big strides. We're talking about a JUCO player who has only played 2 years of major college football, and some people call him a one-year wonder. I think that year last season, as far as 2009 goes, that's an acclimation type season that he needed to adapt to the SEC game, adapt to a higher level of competition. And once he got his footing, you're talking about a kid that really made the difference in games. And I think that the Titans would be thrilled, because looking at their defensive front, they're going to stick with a 4-3, and they still like to rotate people in and out. I mean, they have different schemes and different four fronts for all different situations, nickel, dime, it doesn't matter. They sometimes, you know, put all defensive ends out there, in which case Fairley would be ideal for a pass rushing situation like that. So, yeah, I love the fit, and that's that. I've got the mock draft linked in the chat room for the listeners, and, yes, my pick at eight is the identical.
So you do see him slipping that far then, because I know it's a deep defensive player class, especially on the D line. It is very deep in that position, Joe. But Nick Fairley, some say, is the best D lineman and best defensive player behind Patrick Peterson in this year's draft. So you say that Marcell Dareus then, in your mind, will go higher, and you see him as a better pro.
Well, right now, the problem is that you're talking about selling apples and oranges for different chefs making different recipes. You know, to quote Bill Parcells, we shop for groceries, but we're not all making the same meal, per se. And looking at the comparison between Dareus and or Dareus, I guess, as he likes to be called, and Fairley, the problem is that Dareus fits in every scheme. He is just one of those uncontainable forces of nature. Even in a 3-4 front occupying and absorbing blocks, he was still able to be a pass rushing force. So I think that's what really makes him appealing to just every single team in the NFL. It doesn't matter what scheme you run, Dareus fits right in there, and that's why he's a little higher ranked than Fairley. And also, once again, the level of competition and proof of what he's done in the past. I mean, Dareus, his best game was actually a year's past. I mean, even looking at last season, he was able to produce, but I think he's got a better track record. He's also got a great backstory. I mean, both of his parents are, of course, no longer with us. He has a number of different siblings that he not only has been supporting, but will be supporting at the next level. So, you know, motivation is not a question, and this is not a young man that's going to be intimidated by the biggest of stages. I think he's going to hit that and thrive. So that's why he's a little bit higher, but also I'm just a wacky kind of guy, Vito. I'm in love also with Robert Quinn from North Carolina. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm man enough to admit it. This guy has talent just dripping off him.
You see him as a better pro than Nick Fairley and also Marcell Dareus. Is that what you're saying, Joe?
I see Robert Quinn as the number 3 overall player in this entire draft.
Okay. Wow, so high praise then. You do have strong man love then for him, don't you?
He plays the pass well. He contains the edge extremely well. He's a terrific bender off the outside edge. He just sets it extremely. It doesn't matter pass or run. He just seems to have his head on a swivel at all times, and I just love the way he's relentless on the pass rush. And once again, another player I think that appeals to each and every scheme, more so in my opinion, a devastating pass rusher in the 4-3 defense. But even if you're running a 3-4, you could turn him into what you need. He's that good of an athlete and also a world-class wrestler. Had he not taken up football, you're looking at an Olympian-level type of wrestler. He was undefeated in high school, just a terrific all-around athlete.
And, Joe, we got to move on. So let's go on the clock with the 49ers now with the 7th overall pick. And on with us to make that selection for the 49ers tonight is Matt Barrows of the Sacramento Bee. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Good to talk to you again, Matt. Joe Everett,
nice
talking
to you guys.
Draft Bible.
That's right.
Great,
Matt. Matt, what's your take on, first off, Alex Smith being the man in San Fran?
Well, he's not quite the man yet, although it sounds like Jim Harbaugh really wants him to be the man. He's been heaping spoonfuls of love on Alex Smith since he got the job in January. And, you know, I think the reason for that is twofold. One is because of this crazy offseason that we're in, and there's no guarantee when or how the 49ers can bring in a veteran quarterback, and you know, Smith is from the area. He's obviously familiar with all the players You know, he's started games. He has a little bit of knowledge of the West Coast, having played it in 2005 under Mike McCarthy. And the other part of it is that I think that Jim Harbaugh really thinks that, you know, Smith has some skills, that he can work with Smith and to make him a quality quarterback. Now, having said that, I still think that it's up to Smith in the end. He is an unrestricted free agent, and, you know, he's had a rough go of it in San Francisco, and it'll be up to him as to whether he'll return for a seventh season. But I do think that the 49ers are still going to take a quarterback at some point in this draft.
Matt, when you analyze Alex Smith's lack of success, he has improved, but truly has never lived up to the expectations nor the billing of being a number one overall draft pick. So do you point to the revolving door of coaches and schemes for Smith's lack of true progression, or is he just simply not good enough to be a franchise QB in this league, Matt? What's your take on that? What stance do you take?
Well, I say it's both. I mean, it's a gray area. You know, no quarterback has had as rough a go of it as Alex Smith. He's had six different offensive coordinators. He's had three required surgery. He's had two defensive-minded coaches who, I'm sorry, just didn't know anything about the position. And this year he's going to have an offensive-minded coach, a guy who knows a thing or two about quarterbacks. And so he'll have something that he hasn't had before, and that's consistency and expertise at the head coaching spot. But, you know, if you ask me if he can be a number one quarterback, despite all those things, despite all those obstacles, I still think that if you had a legitimate, you know, starter, a Super Bowl-type guy, he would have at least shown you more flashes. He would have at least, you know, put the team on his shoulders. He would have at least, you know, made a better go of it than Smith has. So I don't think that he's a franchise quarterback per se. Is he good enough to get a good team with a good defense to the Super Bowl, you know, like Brad Johnson did? Or
Trent Dilfer
did?
The Ravens?
Yeah, I think he is, but he's not elite. He's not an elite quarterback, I can say that.
Now, before we specifically address the seventh overall selection, Matt, let's first get Joe's thoughts on the 49ers' needs and what voids they need to fill in this draft. Joe,
well,
take it away.
Yeah, as far as the 49ers, I mean, you're still looking at some secondary issues. They have some uncertainties in free agencies. I think they'll bring Deshaun Goldson back. He's just done such a good job. He has a good track record, so that's something you have to like there. But as far as outside, maybe an outside pass rusher is also on the docket. Definitely somewhere they have to look. But unfortunately, I mean, I hate to point out the obvious, but you really do have to look at the quarterback position and the lack of an answer there. And also, it just seems to me, and I'm sure Matt would agree, I mean, they've taken care of all the other pieces. There's a good patchwork offensive line right now as far as the young guys. If they turn into great pros, which the team is assuming they will, then that's solved up. They've got great wide receivers and pass catchers and guys like Gore and Crabtree and Davis. So, I mean, it just seems to me if it's not quarterback or cornerback, then maybe outside linebacker. So, yeah, I've got to look at either corner or 2B.
And, Matt, in your mind, with the addition of a franchise QB, you know, possibly a veteran presence to put behind center with the pieces already in place, which I believe is a talented team surrounding the QB. Can they be a playoff team in 2011? Bearing an end to.
I think they can. I mean, all the things that you said, plus the fact that it's a terrible division. I mean, look at what Seattle did last year. They made the playoffs with a losing record. You know, I think though the counterpoint is that this strange off season, if it continues to linger on, and the lockout, the stays, the appeals court, if that process goes deep into August. That's going to put a team like the 49ers, who have a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, and they're probably going to, they might have a new quarterback. It's going to put them at a real disadvantage, so that it's very hard to see them coming out of the chute being very good. I mean, I think they have the potential to be good. I don't think it's going to be early. I think it's, it, you know, if this team makes a playoff, it's going to be because of a late charge when they start to gel during the second half of the season.
And with the change to a, isn't it a, they're changing to a 4-3 scheme this year, Matt?
No,
is
they're going to stick with a 3-4. It might be more.
Okay, so they got a new D coordinator,
than,
correct?
Yeah,
and
Vic
Fangio.
But he's going to run mostly a 3-4. I think you'll see them flip in and out, but you know, their standard defense will be a 3-4.
And he comes from the Dom Capers school of defense. So do you see the 49ers with their seventh overall selection looking for a rush end or an outside linebacker modeled after Clay Matthews?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Dom Capers and Vic Fangio sort of grew up together in coaching. They hail from the same spots. They were on the same staffs. And I think Fangio wants to have an aggressive attacking defense like Capers has in Green Bay. And what he's lacking right now are the pieces. And so, you know, every team is looking for a Clay Matthews, and, you know, the 49ers are certainly one of them. I think if Von Miller were ever to fall to seven, he would be, you know, a no-brainer pick. I don't think that's going to happen. And then you look at a guy like Patrick Peterson, who has drawn comparisons himself to Charles Woodson, and I think it's an apt comparison, and I think that's something that the 49ers would also do very quickly if he were to fall to them. He's a guy who, you know, down the line is so versatile that you could, you know, rush him off the end, off the edge. He can play cornerback. He can play safety. He can play all over the field. He's just a multi-talented player. So I think Peterson, I don't think Von Miller will be there. I think Robert Quinn is a possibility. I think Prince Mukamara is a possibility. I think Blaine Gabbert is a possibility. You know, I really think that there's a strong sense that he might drop all the way to seven. You know, none of the beat writers in any of the cities ahead of me in San Francisco think that their teams are going to take a quarterback other than Carolina. So I think that Gabbert could either be the 49ers pick, or he could be a mechanism for them to trade further down for other teams that want to trade up and grab a quarterback.
If it's not Gabbert, though, or another quarterback at seven, do they take one at 45? And is there a QB you see being available with that pick of theirs in the second round that is worthy of being selected, you think, that can be a more likely franchise QB and provide more and bring more to the table than what Alex Smith can currently for the 49ers, if they do indeed choose to bring him back?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question at 45 is that's the 13th pick in the second round, and all of those quarterback needy teams, which are many of them are picking after the 49ers in the first round, it flips in the second, and they're all of a sudden picking before the 49ers. So I think the question is whether those quarterbacks are going to be there, and then you have to raise the scenario of them trading, you know, a little higher in the second round, or perhaps trading into the end of the first round to get a quarterback. But if they were to stay put at 45, I think the guys who might be there, maybe Colin Kaepernick. I know that there's been a lot of buzz about him, and justifiably so, but, you know, he's a project. And if teams are kind of trusting their draft analysis, they don't put a project in the first round. I mean, he would have a second round, maybe even a third round grade. There's a chance that he gets there, and I think he would just be a super type of prospect for someone like Jim Harbaugh to mold and to mentor while you have an Alex Smith or some other veteran actually taking the snaps in 2011. I think Kaepernick has, you know, just as many tools as Cam Newton does. minus the character concerns. And what he needs is just a little bit of time to learn a pro system, learn how to read defenses. But he's got a cannon. He's a tall guy. He's a strong guy. And, you know, he's run for thousands and thousands of yards at Nevada. He knows how to get the ball across that first down marker and across the end zone.
So, Matt, real quick before I let you go, who do you have the 49ers selecting with their first-round draft choice, the 7th overall pick in this year's draft?
Well, you know, I've done a lot of these mocks, and like I said, none of the guys ahead of me, you know, Kent Summers in Arizona, Mark Gaughan in Buffalo, none of those guys take Gabbert. And so he's always there when I'm picking, and, you know, I'm thinking that's going to happen tomorrow. But I also think that there will be some calls made. I think Washington could use a quarterback. I think Minnesota. I think possibly Miami. And all those teams are going to be making inquiries to the 49ers. And I'm just not sure that Harbaugh loves Gabbert. So I think if they get those phone calls and get a nice offer, they might trade down.
Matt, thank you very much for your time tonight. Good luck
to
you.
All right, thanks for
having me. Good work for the Sacramento Bee.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, talk to you guys later.
And Joe, what grade would you give that selection of Matt?
Well, I'm a little biased. Matt called in for our NFL Draft Bible on the clock podcast for the 49ers. He's very involved with what the 49ers are doing, and I have to agree with him. That is the exact area that people are looking to trade into the first round, or teams that they're later in the first round. Maybe they don't have a first rounder. Oakland, I'm looking at you, and might want to trade in to get, obviously, a Patrick Peterson or a Blaine Gabbert. I mean, the names he brought up. So I would have to agree with his viewpoint there. As far as the pick, I mean, I can't go against it. I'd give my man Matt Burrows an A once again, but then again, Vito, I'm biased.
And let's bring Hunter Ansley into the discussion now. Hunter, sorry for making you wait all that time.
No, that's on me, Vito. I'm happy to be here. I agree, though. I think the 49ers are looking for a difference maker on the defensive side of the ball. I think Gabbert's the guy to get humble. And I think Robert Quinn makes a lot of sense there.
So you think quarterback for the 49ers is the missing piece to the puzzle? And with a efficient enough QB behind center in 2011, you see them winning the NFC West. Is that true, Hunter?
Well, I don't know if that's all it'll take. And I'm not sure a rookie guy, you know, is going to be the guy to get them there for that. I'm not sure that Harbaugh is ready to throw Alex Smith to the side. I think he's a guy he can work with. I'm not sure he's, you know, ready to gamble on Gabbert, actually. I really think they look for a guy on defense that can get after the passer, ease the load on the secondary. You know, any kind of big impact player on the defensive side is going to give them an identity over there, let them start building a new unit on that side that's more active and, you know, better at getting to the passer.
And let's put the Cardinals on the clock now. And they hold the 5th overall pick in this year's NFL draft. And making the selection for the Cardinals tonight is Jess from the SB Nation blog, Revenge of the Birds. Jess, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, as you know, the Cardinals' trip from first to worst in the NFC West can be very much attributed to their very shaky QB play that they received from 3 QBs in 2010. Only the Carolina Panthers, in fact, had a worse passing offense in the NFL. So then, Wes, Mike or Jess, my question for you is, will the team's QB of the future come from the draft, or is he currently on another team's roster as we speak?
Well, we've got one or two things that are going to happen. I personally don't think that the Cardinals are going to be drafting a quarterback for the future. Ken Wisenhunt, even though his play was okay at the end of the season, John Skelton is still very, very high on Ken Wisenhunt. Really likes him, and he was not intended to play at all last year. They drafted him to groom him for a couple of years before he took the reins. I believe that they believe that he can be the guy, that he will be very good. Obviously, they need to hand the reins over to somebody with a little bit of experience. People close to the team also feel that if things happen quick enough, that Kevin Cobb would be the other guy that would be in play. Otherwise, if trades can't happen, we're probably looking at Mark Bulger or a Matt Hasselbeck. But if it comes to the draft, I do not think that their quarterback of the future comes from this year's draft.
If Blaine Gabbert is there at number 5, though, do they pass on him for defense still and for defensive playmakers such as Von Miller, a perfect guy to slot into the Cards' 3-4 defensive scheme?
If Von Miller's on the board, I would say absolutely they're going to pass on Gabbert and take Miller, because he is the perfect fit skill with his skill set for the defense that the Cardinals run. Based on the personnel they have, they already have a solid personnel-wise defensive line with Dan Williams in the middle and Calais Campbell and Darnell Dockett anchoring the line. They need help on the outside. Joey Porter played too many downs last year and was mostly ineffective. They have a promising young guy in O'Brien Schofield, but Von Miller is the exact type of edge rusher that the Cardinals really, really need, although I doubt anything I've come across has him gone at 2 or 3, either going to the Broncos or the Bills.
If both Miller and Patrick Peterson were available at 5, Jess, would Miller be the more coveted selection of theirs?
I believe so. I think Miller would be number 1 on their board, followed by Peterson.
Now, Jess, you don't believe it will be Blaine Gabbert or Cam Newton at 5, but how about acquiring a veteran presence at QB, such as Kevin Cobb, via trade? And how much do you think the Cards would be willing to give up in return for Kevin Cobb?
Trading the first pick won't happen. Trading next year's first pick, I don't think there's any question that they would do that. And Philadelphia has, and Andy Reid has come out and said that the team would consider a 2012 pick. I don't think there'd be any question if he became available that they would, in a heartbeat, give up their 2012 first round pick.
So who do you have, Jess, the Cards taking with their first round draft pick here, the 5th overall pick in this year's draft?
I believe it'll end up being Patrick Peterson. Or it'll be one of two things. If Gabbert's still available, they may take the trade down version. They Rod Graves had came out this last week and has said as much that they're going to take phone calls. It's just doing their due diligence, but I think they really are going to consider, if there's a quarterback available, taking calls and moving down a few picks, because they believe that this draft is deep enough that they're going to get an impact player at a position that they want. If Gabbert's not available, I don't think there's any question that it will be Patrick Peterson that would be donning the Cardinal red this next season.
Jess, thank you very much for your time tonight, and good luck to you with your work for the SB Nation blog, Revenge of the Birds.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right, guys. What do you think of this pick made by Jess? The right one for the Cards, yes or no? Hunter, you first on this one.
I love Patrick Peterson to the Cardinals. I really don't think they're going to look for a quarterback here. I think that, you know, Ken Whisenhunt's kind of under pressure to win pretty quickly. I don't think he wants to rest his future on another rookie passer, you know, and they got a developmental guy in the organization to look to add a veteran. So, you know, I think it comes down to Von Miller or Patrick Peterson, you know, whichever one's available. I don't see Miller being there for him, and I think Peterson, you know, is a great fit. The secondary certainly, you know, is in need of some help. I'd look at Tyron Smith out of USC as a real dark horse if they want to patch up that offensive line, but I like Patrick Peterson there.
Joe, your take on this pick, the right one for the Cards?
Well, absolutely, it's a good pick. I have no problems at all. I mean, especially when you look at what else they have, and yes, Greg Toler had a good season, but you add a Patrick Peterson to that Cardinals defense, he starts automatically opposite DRC. And really, they have some good safeties there with a guy like Adrian Wilson, who is basically the captain of this defense. Now with Dansby out of the picture, this guy calls all the shots. You've got Darnell Dockett. Really, if you add that other corner, I think they've got enough pass rush and enough talent that this is now a very dominant defense in a very weak division. So, yeah, I mean, if it's not Gabbert, sure, that's fine. I kind of expect him to go Gabbert, but I cannot fault Peterson at all because Vito, like I said, I mean, outside of Quinn, that's the only player that trumps him on defense in my mind. Peterson's number two on my big board.
And on the clock now, with the fourth overall selection in this year's NFL draft, are the Buffalo Bills. And picking for them tonight is Jason from the SB Nation blog, Buffalo Rumblings. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Vita?
Hey, Jace. Now, first off, is Ryan Fitzpatrick the solution at QB for the Bills into the future? Are you confident with him as their number one QB?
Well, what I'll do first is tell you what the Bills think about him. Chan Gailey, the head coach, thinks he can win with him. He's come out and said he can win championships with him. That's debatable whether that's just playing to Fitzpatrick in the offseason. Just today, Buddy Nix, the GM, was talking on a Toronto radio station, and what he mentioned was he felt the Bills were in the exact same spot with Ryan Fitzpatrick that the Chargers were with Drew Brees around 2004, where he had a team that wasn't quite ready for prime time, a pretty decent quarterback, and he mentioned that that was the perfect time for them to pick Phillip Rivers. So I think Fitzpatrick is a good caretaker quarterback. He can get the Bills to their franchise quarterback if they choose to draft him in this in the 2011 draft, and I think they see him ultimately as a very good bridge quarterback.
And if I didn't say it already, the Bills have the third overall pick. Did I say fourth?
I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah. Well, now, if they don't take QB, address that with this pick, which, you know, they have kind of been debating whether or not to take a QB with their first-round draft choice for a couple of years now, it seems like. But if they pass over a QB once again with this pick, what position do you think they target? And what do you think they need to address the most in this year's draft?
If they pass on Blaine Gabbert, which I don't think they will, if they pass on Gabbert, I think they're going front seven defense all the way. The two guys that I think they really, really like are Marcell Dareus out of Alabama. I think he fits their 3-4, 4-3 multiple defense because Dareus can play multiple different positions. And the defense can morph without taking personnel off the field. And then the other guy that everybody knows they really like is Von Miller. I think he's a plug-and-play outside linebacker in this league. I think he can come in and play one of those two outside linebackers for the Bills and get pressure on the quarterback, which since Aaron Schobel's retired, they just haven't been able to do consistently.
So who do you have the Bills taking with the third overall pick in this year's NFL draft then?
I think it's going to be Blaine Gabbert. The Bills have a habit, at least since Buddy Nix has been the GM, of tipping their hand with that first-round pick. Last year, while everybody was focused on Jimmy Clausen and the offensive tackles with the Bills at 9, Buddy Nix and Chan Gailey kept talking about a scat back. And everyone kind of ignored that talk because they had Marshawn Lynch and Fred Jackson on the roster. And then, bam, at the 9th pick, there's C.J. Spiller. This year, they have mentioned franchise quarterback, perfect time to draft a franchise quarterback behind Ryan Fitzpatrick probably a dozen times in the past month. And I don't think it's a smokescreen. The Bills front office is not the type of organization to lay real thick smokescreens, and I think that's just where they're going to go. I think they're going to take a Aaron Rodgers type of approach to this draft, get a guy like Gabbert who admittedly needs a lot of work, but he's got time behind Fitzpatrick, and 2 years down the line, potentially, they build the team just like Green Bay did with Rodgers, and when Rodgers took over that team, it was ready for prime time at the same time Rodgers was, and I think that's the approach Buffalo's going to take with number 3. I think they go Blaine Gabbert out of Missouri.
Well, Jason, thank you very much for your time tonight. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thanks. I really appreciate the time. Take care.
You too. Have a good one. Now, Joe and Hunter, is Blaine Gabbert the right selection with this pick? Now, I know a couple guys have said the same name now, but, you know, the Bills obviously have the first opportunity to take him. Do you envision that happening, him going that high? Especially, let's say, if Cam Newton's still on the board, guys. Do they go with him over Gabbert? That's another question for you guys to ponder and to debate right now as you grade this pick made by Jason.
Well, you know, Christian Ponder might be in the conversation, too, as far as pondering things. But I'll take his pick, and I actually like the great point that Jason brought up in the simple fact that the Bills made it very obvious for us last year, folks, and the Chan Gailey's exact words were, we're looking for that water bug type of running back. And what did they draft? They went right to C.J. Spiller. So if the quarterback talk has been prevailing all offseason and that's the prominent feature, then I wouldn't be surprised. And I'm also one of the people that doesn't think there's been some talk about Gabbert falling outside of the top five because no one really wants to go quarterback. I don't buy that for a second. I think he's a top five pick just because of the potential he has. And, you know, he could fit very well in a Buffalo situation. And also, you have to like Fitzpatrick's presence there, a veteran QB to help Gabbert learn the ropes. So I think it's a great pick. But like Jason brought up, to preface this whole thing, I do believe Von Miller has got to be on their radar. I mean, he's a fabulous prospect, and he really fits a huge need for the Bills because, really, look at their outside linebackers right now, guys. The best option, Sean Merriman? Are you serious? This can't be.
So, Hunter, is this the year the Bills finally take a QB who they believe will be their future franchise QB? Do they get him in this draft and with their third overall pick?
I think Jason and Joe make good points that, you know, Buffalo is not in a position where they really have to smoke screen. I mean, one of those quarterbacks is going to be there for them if Denver stands pat and doesn't trade it away to somebody. So, you know, if they want one, they have no reason to really hide it unless they're trying to trade down themselves, and I don't think they are. I don't think Von Miller is going to be there for them, and I will take the other side of this and say I don't think it's Blaine Gabbert at number three. I just, you know, Gabbert reminds me a little bit of Jay Cutler. I think, you know, some of the similar statistics in college, some of the similar question marks, similar build kind of guys, a lot of the same strengths, you know, mobile guys, big arms that just need a little refinement, need a little bit of that heat taking off passes, you know, that aren't traveling 20, 30 yards. So I think that Gabbert could fall down to number 10 is actually where I have him slated. I think the Bills take Marcell Dareus. You look at the secondary, and it wasn't long ago that they were one of the best in the NFL. I just think they need help in the front seven. I think they need to get to the passer more and kind of ease the load on those back four. And so I really think that, you know, Marcell Dareus, if he's there, just makes too much sense. You look at the kind of season Kyle Williams had last year and how bad the Bills still were against the run, and you can't have that. You can't have a guy like Williams working hard inside all by himself. So I think you add a guy like Dareus who can push the line, can create some pressure, but also so strong against the run at 5-tech. He's going to ease things up for Sean Merriman and Arthur Motes outside. Chris Kelce just signed a big contract for him. Too big in my mind for them to now add Von Miller as well. And, you know, then you still have Danny Batten who can play outside. So I think Dareus is going to be the pick because I think Miller will be off the board. And I don't know. Gabbert, to me, I'm not sure Buffalo wants to go with Gabbert when there should be three quarterbacks sitting there for him with that second-round pick. But, you know, I think they may be high on guys like Kaepernick or Ponder. So I think Gabbert slips some, but certainly an option for him. You know, like Jason said, Fitzpatrick would be a great quarterback to carry them over into getting the franchise guy.
Now let's revert back a couple of picks to the 10th overall pick and the Washington Redskins guys. Now, there were lots, and trust me, lots of offensive drama in D.C. a year ago. But defense is a huge issue for the Skins also. As in all the major categories, guys, they rank 20 or below, including 31st in total yards per game allowed. We'll get to the 10th pick momentarily, but first, let's start off by talking about a couple of big-name veterans with possible uncertain futures in D.C., starting off with their QB from last season, Donovan McNabb. Will he be back in 2011 as his starting QB? First with you, Joe, on this one. What's your take on that?
No, he will not be back. I mean, you don't bench a guy like McNabb and throw in Rex Grossman and expect McNabb to stick around. I mean, it's obviously they are moving on, and you expect Washington not only to look at QB, but I also expect McNabb to find a very good home. I would not be surprised if the Minnesota Vikings called up his cell phone, the Tennessee Titans. This is, you talk about great sports cars, just having the keys and they just need a driver. That's Tennessee. That's San Francisco, where you have quarterbacks guru Jim Harbaugh. So I think there's a lot of potential homes for McNabb. Not only is he not done, but I do believe he's done in Washington. And guys, I'm unfortunately done with the show. I've got to jump over to What's Your Fantasy. It has been a pleasure, and I love you, Vito, but I've got to jump out. And Hunter, it has been a pleasure. Gentlemen, I am off.
Thank you very much, Joe, but all I know now is that you don't love me enough that if you're leaving me. That's all I know.
Every Wednesday, 11 p.m., What's Your Fantasy? Jared and I, we do
all
it
right.
Every week, so I can't go
I'll
again.
I'll let you go. Have a good
Cheers,
one, Joe.
Fellas. Take care, Joe. All right, peace.
Now, Hunter, I ask you the same question that I asked Joe previously. Donovan McNabb, is he in the equation for the Redskins next season?
No, I don't think so. I think Joe's exactly right. They're done with Donovan McNabb. Mike Shanahan, you know, made it pretty clear that's not the guy he wants to be his quarterback. You know, anytime you get benched for Rex Grossman, I think that's got to be a pretty clear signal that, you know, you're done with that current team. And I think there's going to be a lot of interest in him. You know, the Vikings he brought up, I'm not as sure about the Titans, but I think the Vikings would love to bring him in as a bridge. You know, I think they want to start getting that quarterback in. They want to find somebody maybe in this draft or maybe take a chance on developing one of the guys they've got. But I don't think they want to enter the season with Tarvaris Jackson or Joe Webb as their guy under center. And I think McNabb's time is up in Washington, and Minnesota seems like a likely landing spot. Can't quite rule out Arizona yet either.
Hunter, let's turn our attention now to the defensive side of the ball and Albert Haynesworth, another veteran of the Redskins with an uncertain, definitely an uncertain future in D.C. Do you expect him back, though, in 2011, Joe? Or Hunter, excuse me.
No, either way, Vito. I don't think he's coming back. I think that, you know, Haynesworth time, just like McNabb, this is obviously a guy that Shanahan wasn't high on, that he didn't want on his team, you know, didn't want him playing, you know, one of the best defensive linemen out there when he's on. And you know, Shanahan kind of poked him, you know. He didn't seem to want to get him on the field. Didn't seem like he wanted that to be part of his long-term equation there. So I think he's another guy that the Redskins will kind of, you know, let him go, get rid of him, and see what happens, see what they can build around. Now, that opens up some possibilities for a big defensive lineman at the 10 spot, and I still think they're looking for a quarterback there. But, you know, just not a guy that Shanahan ever seemed that interested in keeping around long-term, so I'd be very shocked if either of those guys were back.
As for that 10th overall pick now, Hunter, is it more likely for the Skins to select a QB or a wide receiver? And possibly Julio Jones still being around then at number 10, does that make it more fitting, more attractive for the Redskins to go in that direction with the 10th overall selection, if that's the case?
Yeah. The only way I really see him going receiver, Vito, and I'm not even sure it happens then, is if Julio is still on the board. I think though that you look at what Shanahan did finding Brandon Marshall a little later. You know, he doesn't mind taking some of these size, speed prospects that are a little raw, you know, because he believes he can develop them. He believes they fit his offense. He can work with these guys. So I don't think a guy like Julio Jones, who's just, you know, a pretty polished guy, a tough physical guy, I'm not sure that he's, you know, somebody Shanahan's going to go after in the first round, especially with the need under center. I just think if a guy like Blaine Gabbert falls, which I have as a big possibility, that'll be somebody they take, even moving up for him. So I think quarterback they look at a lot there, and if it's not quarterback, I think maybe they try and find that impact defender, somebody along the defensive line that can hold against the run.
And who would that be, Hunter?
J.J. Watt has got a shot there. again, a guy I think could fall a little further than some are projecting, but he does fit that mold as, you know, a big, strong five-tech type guy who can get after the passer still, but, you know, can anchor against the run, not going to get moved real easily. So I think Watt's a possibility there. Daquan Bauer is another guy that could be falling some. They might look at, you know, as too athletic, too much of an upside to pass on even with the injury risk. You know, Shanahan showed a little bit of a penchant in Denver for some athletic defensive linemen. So I think you look at a guy with high upside who maybe doesn't have quite the polish of some other people, but, you know, Bowers or Watt in there, guys that seem to make a lot of sense to me for Washington if they're going to go D-line. And then you can't rule out Robert Quinn as just such an impact guy to put him across from Brian Arakpo, I think would give that defense some real teeth.
So who do you have the Redskins taking, man, with the 10th overall pick in this year's NFL draft?
I have Blaine Gabbert falling right now, and I'm just finishing up the final mock draft here, and that's where I'm going to stick him to Washington now. They, like I said, that they may want him so bad they move up for him, but I just see a lot of Jay Cutler in Blaine Gabbert. I think he's that kind of guy. He's got the mobility. He's got the arm, you know, he's a big kid, lots of upside, lots of potential, and I think Shanahan, after the McNabb fiasco, will say, okay, that didn't quite work trying to find somebody else's guy. Let me go get mine. Let me try and finish what I started with Jay Cutler back in Denver. And I think if Gabbert falls, it's kind of a no-brainer for Washington there, and I wouldn't rule out Jake Locker if Gabbert's gone.
Let's put the Cowboys on the clock now, and they hold the 9th overall selection in this year's NFL draft, Hunter. Drama and disappointment certainly defined Big D last season. And the defense in Big D was part of that disappointment, as it allowed 27, Hunter, plus points 10 times in 2010. It ranked 31st in points per game allowed, and surrendered the most TD passes on the season also. So should the Cowboys then address their defensive issues with their pick at number 9, specifically in the secondary, maybe with a shutdown corner such as Pat Peterson or the Prince out of Nebraska if he falls that far, which it sounds like he is more and more likely now to do so?
Yeah, I think if they want Peterson, they're going to have to move up. I just don't see any way he falls that far, you know. And, yeah, I know you agree. It's just not something that's going to happen at number 9. Prince on Kamara, on the other hand, could very well be the pick. You know, Mike Jenkins really took a step backwards last year. Terrence Newman is getting very old. I don't see Orlando Scandrick as a guy you want having any shot at your number 1 corner role. So, you know, in that division, with the way the Eagles kind of stepped up their passing game, and you look at Eli Manning and some of the receivers on the Giants, it's certainly going to be a big deal to shut that down. I think J.J. Watt, again, the problems they had along the defensive line at 5-tech last year could be a guy. You know, Marcus Spears won't be there, so Watt's got a shot. And then the same name again, Robert Quinn. They've been looking for a guy opposite DeMarcus Ware, a really steady, consistent guy who can get to the passer just as well, and they haven't found that exactly yet. So, you know, need and value should match up somewhere in there. You know it's going to be a flashy pick, someone with some good athleticism, someone who, you know, gets some oohs and ahs. And I think that way, you know, that makes Tyron Smith, the offensive tackle, a possibility, even though Jerry Jones doesn't like using those early round picks on offensive linemen. I do think Smith, especially considering, you know, he could play on the right side right now, move over to the left in a little bit, I think he looks like a kind of a great pick there.
And don't they badly need a right tackle right now, Hunter, to plug in for Mark Colombo, who just does not look like he has many days left out there? Like, he can play really any games anymore. So I think his years and his days are numbered as a Cowboy and as being a productive lineman. So they should definitely address that line in this draft. And you're saying with this first round selection of theirs also, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, if Tony Romo is your guy, and if Jason Garrett, now your head coach, has, you know, even a fraction of the input that Jerry Jones says he's going to have, Garrett's going to say, we have got to protect our quarterback better. We have got to find a way to keep Tony Romo healthy for 16 games. Because, you know, even though the Cowboys perked up a little bit with John Kitten under center, Romo's the guy they want at quarterback, obviously, at least right now. So I think that Garrett's going to really be pushing to say, let's protect Tony Romo, let's keep him alive so that this offense can can do what it's supposed to do and run like I want it to. And I really like Smith just because, like we said, with that athleticism, with that upside, he's got that freakish nature about him that I think he's an easier sell to Jerry Jones than a lot of these offensive tackles have been in the past.
Now, the Cowboys do very much, though, like to be strong at the glamour positions. Now, saying Manhunter, do you think they could actually take a look at Julio Jones at number 9? You know, as a result of the problems that Dez Bryant has been currently enduring through, those problems, you think, possibly play a factor in their decision-making with this pick? Any
yeah,
at all,
yeah.
Hunter, you think?
As crazy as it sounds, Vito, I do. I think even after Dez Bryant, even with Miles Austin, you know, some of the other targets they have for this offense, that if a guy like Julio Jones is there, you know, this is Jerry Jones running this team. Like you said, he loves that flash at the glamour positions, and you know he loved the idea of an offense that had Miles Austin and Dez Bryant and Julio Jones running out there. I mean, it's a lot invested at the receiver position, but it seems like one of those crazy situations that not too many teams would do other than a Jerry Jones-run Cowboys club. I think it's a small chance, and I don't think Julio will be there for him, so I don't think Dallas fans will have to worry about it. But, you know, at the same time, yeah, it's something you can't rule out just because of the flash, because of the great combine he had, the size he's got, and, you know, the fact that it could be a sore spot for him.
All things considered, though, Hunter, was taking Dez Bryant in the first round of last year's NFL draft the right choice, looking back at it now, for the Cowboys? What's your take on that?
That's tough to say. It's tough after just one season to look back and say, oh, you really screwed up here, because you watch the guy when he's healthy and physically, I mean, this is such a great player. You see that game-breaking ability. You see how he can just dominate defensive backs and get the ball, and he helps out on special teams. You know, he makes you so dynamic. And when you can get him as low as the Cowboys did, it's hard to fault them for taking that chance. Even with some of the character concerns, you know, that Roy Williams hadn't worked out, they needed somebody to take some attention off of Miles Austin. And, you know, he certainly did that when healthy. So I'm not going to go so far as to say that was a big mistake. I know right now it's not looking great. But when you get this guy on the field, when you get him healthy, he opens up so many things for your offense, and it's hard to cover Dallas when, you know, Witten and Bryant and Austin are all out there running around and you got Romo healthy. So I wouldn't call it a mistake just yet. If his legal troubles or anything off the field keeps him from getting back into the uniform and out there winning games for him, then yeah. But for now, where they got him, it makes sense to me to take that chance that low.
So who do you have the boys taking with this first-round selection of theirs, then, Hunter?
You know, I went with Tyron Smith, and I certainly think that there's a, you know, big chance they ignore offensive tackle again because it's not a glamour position. But, you know, I like that he's got enough flash to be kind of an easier sell for Jason Garrett, who I think will really be in his corner. I think if they want to turn this thing around quick, then the answer is to keep Tony Romo throwing touchdown passes and standing upright. So I think Smith is the pick there. And, you know, partly that's because only once in the last 10 years have we seen a draft without an offensive tackle in the top 10. So one of them's going to go up there, and Smith certainly seems like the guy who's going to get that nod as the first off the board.
But, Hunter, it's not a sexy enough pick for Jerry Jones, the man in charge of the boys. So it can't happen.
You know,
come on, Hunter.
It may not be, but I really think, you know, I'm probably sticking my foot in my mouth because Jerry Jones has proven it so many times that he doesn't care about anybody else's input. It's his team. But I think Garrett will be able to sell him on the idea of grabbing an offensive tackle like Smith, because when you look at that position, which is not a glamour spot really, this is a guy that has some flash and some sparkle to him. He's an athletic guy. He's built like a defensive end. When you look at this guy, he's not a flabby guy. So I think that even though it's not a flashy position, he's a flashy enough prospect. And when you got Jason Garrett chiming in your ear the whole time that we need to protect Tony Romo, we can be a playoff team again if we have a healthy quarterback all year and an offense that can you know, sustain drives and can keep Romo off the mat. I'm going to stick with it. Even if it's not the Cowboys, Smith is a top 10 pick, so I feel safe sticking with it.
Hunter, let's skip up a couple of picks now to the Browns at number 6. and they scored fewer points than every team, Hunter, in the AFC a year ago, and that includes 20 points or less on 12 separate occasions as a result of their very shaky QB play. And it was a big reason for their 5-11 record on the season also. A year ago, around this election, at number 7, actually, to be exact, Cleveland found a corner in Joe Hayden out of Florida. Now, in this year's draft, they need a QB, Hunter, to move ahead in the future. Is that true or false, do you think?
I'm not sure they need one yet. I think Colt McCoy's play last year behind an offensive line that had no right tackle, had no weapons for him in the passing game, wore Peyton Hillis out completely by just running him over and over again with no real back to spell him. I think what McCoy did in that division was definitely enough to earn another look, another year, and I think that's why they'll go with a guy like Julio Jones here, because you get Montario Hardesty back, you find a right tackle somewhere in the second or third round, somebody that, you know, won't be too hard to find a step up there, I don't think. And I think suddenly this offense kind of has an identity. It can do some things well. I think Shurmur will want to work with McCoy at quarterback. I just think that he flashed enough last year in a really bad situation as a rookie for them to say, okay, let's build around him for a year. Worst case, we grab Julio Jones, and then when we get a new quarterback, we've got a number one receiver for him, because there's just not a number one receiver on that team, and nobody even close in my mind. So I still think McCoy is the guy, and they say, let's try and make it easier on him rather than go get somebody else and say, okay, here's the same bad situation, now you try.
So right now you think there is still a strong commitment level to Colt McCoy?
Well, yeah, a one-year commitment, maybe not at the least, but, you know, maybe at the most. But, yeah, I think he bought himself another year. I just think that was such a tough spot for a rookie quarterback to come into in that division with the way that offense looked. And now that you got Hardesty back, probably you got Hillis, you got a strong running game, you just shore up the right side of that line, you give him a receiver that's a, you know, true elite caliber number one guy in the NFL, and you say, okay, let's give you a shot. And that way, you know, like I'm saying, worst case, McCoy doesn't work out, you bring in somebody next year, and he's actually got some weapons to work with. You know, he's got a chance at success. So I don't think you throw McCoy under the bus just yet for that offensive struggles.
And let's say that Colt is indeed the man moving forward at QB for the Browns. At pick number 6, should Holmgren then go for a home run hitter on offense like he has previously noted when talking about the draft and this first round draft pick of theirs? And then is A.J. Green the best case scenario for the Browns with this pick if they are going in the direction of a home run hitter on offense?
Oh, yeah. If A.J. Green's there, I think it takes about 10 seconds to get that card up to the podium unless they want to drop back, because, you know, he would be the absolute perfect scenario here for them. I think that, you know, he's one of the most pro-ready receivers we've seen in a long time. Like we talked about, he's a guy that didn't run the blazing time that some of these people did, but he plays at that 4.48 speed the entire game. I mean, this is a guy that doesn't lose any acceleration in and out of his breaks, high points the ball extremely well. He's the true elite, prototypical number one NFL receiver in my mind. So if A.J. Green somehow falls to 6, which I don't see happening, I think, you know, it's pretty quick click to get up to the podium and say, yeah, we want this guy. Let's let Colt McCoy have a big-time receiver. And think about what that would do to open up an already pretty strong running game, you know, especially with Hardesty coming back. You get a big-time receiver out there, and suddenly this is an offense that, you know, you can now say, okay, McCoy, we've set you up to succeed. Let's see what you can do.
And you forgot to mention the new Madden cover guy, Peyton Hillis, who is officially the cover guy of Madden 12 now, beating out Mike Vick for the title. What an honor for Peyton Hillis after only one good season as a back in the NFL. And look at what he has already achieved, Hunter.
Yeah, well, if he doesn't get some help from a passing game that can unload defenses, you know, unload the box, and I don't think he'll be making a return trip to the cover anytime soon. He wore down so much because there was so much asked of him, you know, that he'd never been the guy in any offense going back to Arkansas when he, you know, had Darren McFadden and Felix Jones kind of carrying the load. So I think that, you know, obviously if Montario Hardesty is healthy, so he's got somebody to take some of those carries away, and then you add a wideout who can stretch the field, a guy who's going to open up the defense, then, yeah, I think Hillis can be a great weapon for him as long as he doesn't have to be the entire offense week in and week out.
And think of that backfield in Arkansas with McFadden, Jones, and then Peyton Hillis as your third-string back. I like my chances with that trio in the backfield.
I think if they could put that back together, that they'd be pretty happy. I was at LSU when those guys were at Arkansas, and it was not ever a lot of fun to have to go up against that backfield. But, yeah, you know, I think Hillis can be a really great running back for you if Hardesty is healthy and can produce and give the Browns another option, so it's not, you know, here, Peyton, take it 40 times a game, and, you know, hopefully we'll score 14 points.
He's not going to just be productive for the Browns. He's going to be the best back in the NFL, Hunter. Come on. He's the Madden 12 cover guy right now. Unless the Madden curse strikes him. And he, you know, by some odd reason, because of that Madden curse, goes out with a season-ending injury, then maybe we don't see him being the best back. That's the only reason, though. In my mind, he's not the best back, Hunter. Come on.
I'm not going that far, man. I think he's a great, tough runner for you and can stay healthy and be productive if he's got a compliment and somebody to help him and certainly a passing game that's open at all. I think he can be good, you know, a solid B-plus guy. But, man, I don't know. You're forgetting about Adrian Peterson and Chris Johnson and Arian Foster and Jamal Charles. I mean, these are all
there's
guys.
There's a lot of them, isn't there? Yeah, there is. Now, Julio Jones is your man with this pick then, Hunter, correct?
Yeah. Love the blocking on the outside. Love the ability to stretch the field to open up that passing game and give Colt McCoy some semblance of, you know, a real live wide receiver on offense.
Now, the Cleveland Plain Dealers, Brown's beat reporter, Mary Ann Cabot, I believe, is her name. She's been talking a lot about Daquan Bowers and associating his name with this first-round pick of the Browns. Do you think there's any way that happens? Going to the Browns with the Browns' 6th overall pick?
Definitely. You look over at that defensive front seven, and, I mean, you know, you got to get out the media guide a couple times to find out who some of these guys are. There's just no difference maker up front for the team, especially, you know, moving to that 4-3. I don't know who it is that's supposed to get to the quarterback for them, you know, who they're counting on to be that guy on third down that can make a play for you in the front seven. So I think Daquan Bowers is a guy that a lot of people have dropping. I do too, but good surprises. I think he may be a little healthier than a lot of guys are letting on. I think some teams may be trying to tank his stock, so they got a shot in the teens at grabbing him. But I think Daquan Bowers or Robert Quinn, somebody, you know, you look at this guy, look at what this defense needs, and you think, God, just anybody that can ease the load on the secondary, anybody that can be an impact player, that can get after the quarterback, that can kind of, you know, make offensive coordinators scheme around him, and there's no one in that front seven. So Bowers and Robert Quinn, definitely options. I just think that, you know, that they want to give Colt McCoy something to work with, set themselves up somehow so that Peyton Hillis isn't worn down at the end of the year.
Hunter, right now it seems like to me that the Bengals organization, who hold the number 4 overall pick in this year's NFL draft, are at a real, and let me reiterate it, a real serious standstill with their QB from past seasons in Carson Palmer. Do you see them ever being able to get out of this standstill that they're currently in and to rekindle the love these two sides, the Bengals organization and Palmer, once had for each other? Is this relationship repairable, you think?
I don't think so. Not certainly not back to the level it was at, you know, a few years back when he was the franchise guy and they were a playoff team, and everybody was happy and holding hands. I don't think you ever get back to that point. There's a small chance he's the quarterback in Cincinnati next year, but if I'm the Bengals, I'm saying, okay, let's just rebuild this offense. You know, the T.O. thing didn't work. Ocho Cinco's gone. Carson Palmer hates us. Let's, you know, find A.J. Green here at number four, maybe the most pro-ready player in the draft, certainly the most pro-ready receiver I've seen in a long time. Let's get him in, and in the second round, you know, Kaepernick or Dalton or Ponder, one of these guys hopefully is there for us. Maybe we trade back into the first to get him. But, you know, the Bengals are a team I think will sit in their picks and see who the best player is there for them. But, no, I think they're ready to move on from Carson Palmer. I just don't think they're ready to talk about it yet. But I think, you know, a guy like Andy Dalton could be somebody they really like. A lot of people talking about Dalton as a first-rounder. I'd be shocked. You watch this guy against San Diego State on tape and struggles to get the ball back across the field. His arm is not – you know, elite enough in my mind to really, you know, spend a first-round pick on him. So I think they're kind of hoping that a Dalton or a Ponder is sitting there in the second round, and they go ahead and grab probably the best offensive player in the draft in A.J. Green with that number four pick.
So you think that their GM, Cincinnati Bengals, speaking of, Mike Brown, will ultimately trade their veteran quarterback, Carson Palmer, then, and Chad Cinco, you're saying, is also on his way out and will not be a member of the Bengals in 2011.
Yeah, it's hard for me to see Cincinnati, you know, wanting to continue down that path. Palmer is not the same quarterback he once was. The injuries have proven that. And, I you know, obviously, Ocho Cinco, you listen to anything he says and you take it all with a big grain of salt. But, you know, if I'm Cincinnati, I don't want him back. Some of those young receivers showed pretty well, I thought, when T.O. and Ocho Cinco were out late in the season. And so I think you add a true number one to those guys, and you got a pretty decent receiving core there that, you know, getting overlooked some. And then you find your quarterback a little later. I don't know that the Bengals, and maybe they do, maybe every NFL team is thinking this way, but I don't know that the Bengals think that right now they're ready to get back to the playoffs this season. You know, they got a lot of holes on that team. So I like taking the best player available, at least in my mock, is A.J. Green right there. I like grabbing him, and I like waiting to that second round and find a quarterback that can work in this new offense, you know, that has the skills, has the mobility, the accuracy, the decision-making to kind of make this thing run. And then you really up his chances of success by adding a guy like A.J. Green. So I'd be surprised if somehow Cincinnati found a way to keep Palmer and Ocho Cinco in 2011.
You don't think there's any chance then that Palmer could still change his mind and want to come back and play for Cincy in 2011? You think that him putting his house in Cincy up for sale was the nail in the coffin, really the deal maker?
Yeah, I think that I don't think he wants to. I won't say it's impossible. I think there's always a chance he shows back up and says, all right, pay me. You know, so slight chance. But if I'm the Bengals, I'm doing everything I can to move on from that. I just
work around him,
Palmer,
right?
Yeah,
yep.
I don't think Palmer's a guy for you going forward. I think he's a stopgap for a team that brings in a developmental guy and says, okay, you know, we'll use you for a year or two so we don't look foolish on Sundays. But I think with that damage to this, you know, relationship, that Palmer's just, you know, if I'm Cincinnati, there's not much about him that makes me say, okay, I'd definitely rather have him than find somebody new.
Do the Bengals then take a QB as high as number four? And also, what do you think is their preference in terms of quarterbacks that, you know, could be coming off the board that high? So in terms of the top two quarterbacks ranked in that order, or ranked one and two on many draft boards currently, do you think they prefer the number one guy, Newton, or the number two guy, Gabbert, more? What's your take on that?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think they'd be happy to have either. I think if Newton falls to four, there's a better chance of Cincinnati taking him. I think it's going to be pretty easy for Cincinnati to pass on Gabbert. I'm not super high on Gabbert. I have him as my fourth overall quarterback. Maybe Cincinnati sees it differently. I know a lot of guys do, but I don't see him going quarterback at four unless Newton falls there. And then even then, I think maybe they say, you know what, we like Andy Dalton or Christian Ponder in the second round, that value, much better than we like Cameron Newton or Blaine Gabbert in the first, especially at number four, when you could get a guy like A.J. Green, who I think a lot of people feel is a safer bet. Cincinnati needs that big number one receiver because, you know, I think the chances of Palmer being back, are as low as they are slightly better than Ocho Cinco returning. So hard for me to see Cincinnati going quarterback at four, but if it does happen, I think it would take Newton falling.
So if four is not a QB for the Bengals, who do you think that pick will be used for? Is it A.J. Green? The
Absolutely.
Best wide receiver in this year's draft class out of Georgia.
Yeah, that's who I've got. I like him there. I think that's just such a great pick at four. I mean, that's not a long way to fall, but Green may be the best player in this class. I've got him at three overall, I think. So, yeah, I think you add A.J. Green and you say, okay, good, we're set at number one wideout for quite a long time. We'll get one of these quarterbacks in the second round or third round. Ricky Stanzi's a name that slips through the cracks some, I think, could be there in the third round. You know, maybe they like him enough to take him in the second. I just think there are better options at quarterback a little later from where the Bengals are concerned than there are at receiver, because nobody in this class is A.J. Green.
Now, who do you have ranked ahead of Blaine Gabbert in your quarterback rankings currently? Because you said you have him as your number four QB. Who's ahead of him then? Who's your top three?
I've got Newton at number one. You know, love that upside. This guy's a winner. He's done it at multiple places. I just think a lot of people are putting too much into the character concerns. You know, you hear that this guy's not going to be able to win over a locker room, but he did a pretty good job of doing that at Blinn and at Auburn, you know, winning championships. Second, I've got Jake Locker. I know the accuracy issues are there. I know this guy's tape in 2010 wasn't what you wanted to see out of a guy that could have been the number one overall guy in last year's draft, but I love the guy's character, the guy's work ethic, the athleticism, the potential is there. I'm not sure there's a quarterback in this class that's going to work as hard to be your guy. You know, he's going to put himself on the line. This guy just wants to win football games, and you look at the kind of loyalty and integrity I think it took to go back to Washington to fulfill his commitment, and then you look at the fact that he did it with a roster that was a lot less talented than people are giving it credit for. You know, those are some of the weakest, softest receivers I've ever seen. You know, I want to see what Jake Locker can do with receivers who have arms longer than 10 inches, who don't alligator arm every ball over the middle, or you know, who can actually get off press coverage. I think this is a better quarterback than his team showed last year, and I think the fact that they went 7-6, won a bowl game, is a huge testament to Locker. And then not spend too much time, but at number three, I've got Ryan Mallett, who I think is just right now the best pure passer in this class.
Yep.
Again, character concerns overblown. This is a big guy with a big arm who does a nice job progressing through his reads, played in a system that I think really kind of challenged him mentally, that he took a hold of, did a great job with Arkansas, and is a guy who doesn't have to move that well. There have been quarterbacks that don't run around, you know, that have been pretty successful. One of those funny things where guys are quick to be down on mobile passers who run first, but then you get a guy who is definitely a pass-first quarterback, and people are knocking him for the same thing. So, you know, Gabbert comes in at four and Ponder at five.
So Cam Newton, man, in your mind, Hunter, is the right pick for the Panthers with the first overall selection in this year's NFL draft. He is a safe choice, a wise choice for the Panthers, you think?
Yeah.
He is worth that selection of theirs.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that people could watch Jimmy Clausen last year and say, man, that's all the receiver's fault that he's not any good. You know, a lot of people you hear say, well, add A.J. Green, see what he can do with him. Well, I think what he can do with him is get sacked and throw it over his head or skip the ball to him. I missed pretty bad on Clausen. I had him as a highly rated guy last year, and I know he was in a tough spot. But if I'm a new coach coming to Carolina and I turn on that 2010 tape, there is nothing I see in Clausen that says, man, if he just had A.J. Green, he'd have been a great quarterback. So I think it's time to move on. I think you look at the upside of a guy like Newton, the track record of winning games. I know there are questions about reading defenses and taking snaps under center and
the verbiage.
Pro style. Yeah,
the verbiage that comes with the playbooks, you know, all the plays, offenses you have to learn with a new offensive coordinator, you know, an NFL-style offense. Can he adapt to all that stuff that comes with being an NFL quarterback, you think? Because it sounded like when he was a Gruden on that special show where he sat down with him, that he did not know many plays. And trust me, you need to know plays in order to run them at the NFL level. There's a lot of verbiage that goes along with those plays, too. So when he has to sit down and make himself learn and memorize all those playbooks and those extensive plays that go beyond a couple routes, do you think he will be able to do that, you think? Will he be able to adjust himself to what could be like learning the French language at first, is what some people are saying, comparing it to.
Oh, French isn't that hard. But, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I think, though, that this is kind of an overblown concern again, and it is important. I don't want to discount it, but this is a guy that learned the playbook well enough at Florida to earn playing time until an injury. He goes to Blinn and learns the playbook there. Then he goes to Auburn and turns around and learns the new system. So, yeah, these aren't super complex systems, and a lot of them are based on the fact that he can run the ball, use that as a threat, and make it easier on him. But, I mean, that's three playbooks he learned in college, and two of them he learned well enough to win national championships and win the Heisman Trophy with the last one. So I'm not as worried about that. I don't think Cameron Newton is, you know, the least intelligent quarterback we've ever seen. A lot of these guys I found to be, you know, a little lower on the IQ scale, that they seem to be successful. They learned the system. And I think the best offensive coordinators don't worry so much about their players adapting to their system as they do adapting their system to their players. And I think with what Newton offers you, such a dynamic player, can buy extra time in the pocket, has the arm to make the big plays, you know, very accurate on his deep passes. I just think there's enough there to say, okay, look, I hope I'm good enough as a coach to teach a player my system, and I hope I'm good enough to devise a system that takes advantage of his strengths. So, you know, will Newton know everything day one from the first snap? Will he have the playbook down like Peyton Manning? No, but I don't think any rookie quarterback will, and I'm not ready to say that this is a guy that can't be taught an NFL system.
Now, don't you think there's developmental time that comes with picking Cam Newton also, where I don't think he will be able to contribute right away at the NFL level? At least, well, for sure, as an elite franchise passer that can take a team to the postseason regardless of the talent surrounding him that the team who picks him puts out there every Sunday for him. You know, the offensive weapons that he has to work with in his arsenal. I mean, regardless of that, doesn't he still need developmental time and possibly on the sidelines under the tutelage of a veteran presence under center? What's your take on that also?
Yeah, I think he'll need time. I think they all need some time. You know, you hear a lot about the Matt Ryans and Joe Flaccos and Sam Bradfords, and they had great rookie seasons by rookie season standards, but they didn't have everything mastered from day one either. And then you look at Sam Bradford as the season went on. Defenses figured it out a little bit. He struggled down the stretch, you know, when they try and expand that playbook and give him a little more. Even Bradford had some trouble with that. So I think any rookie quarterback you draft, unless he somehow played in the NFL and then went back to school and re-entered, is going to have a learning curve there. I think Newton will be able to ease that a little bit, soften it with some of his mobility, some of his running, I think will make it a little easier on him at first. You know, you don't want to get in that habit of tucking your head and heading for the first down marker, or, you know, as a first option. But I do think his mobility and his athleticism helps him. I think that big arm, the ability to extend a play and then capitalize on it by getting the ball downfield, will help him some in some of these kind of street ball situations. So, yeah, it's going to take time, obviously, but I think it's going to take time with any rookie quarterback. And, you know, just because Newton came from an offense that was a little simplified, funky, doesn't look like what NFL teams do, doesn't mean he can't learn an NFL system. And that, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks, you know, it's somewhat of a recent trend to stick these guys out there immediately. I don't know that Rivera is under a whole lot of pressure to win right this second. And so I think that they have a little time to bring Newton along. And like I said, athletically, this guy's gifts, I think, will help buy him some time as he's learning the playbook.
Do you think he can learn how to make the proper reads with time? You know, knowing not to just go to the first option, obviously, you know, to look for other routes that your receivers are running out there is what I'm pretty much trying to get at. You really don't have any concern with that once he gets enough time and experience out there on the NFL playing field.
I wouldn't say I have no concern, but, you know, I think this is another thing that gets overblown that people really kind of get hyperbolic about and exaggerate, is that these college offenses, oh, he only made one read. That's it. Now, I mean, that's not true. You can't run against SEC defenses when you have only one read. I don't care what kind of athlete you are. Now, was it simpler than than some of the complex pro-style systems you may see at a Georgia or a USC. Yeah, it was simpler. But the guy still made reads. When he's out there rolling around and he's extending plays, I don't, you know, he doesn't lock on to one guy every single time. He's checking through it as he's moving. And so I think the potential to make the reads is there. This is a guy that had a lot of throws where, you know, you shield the safety in the corner and, you know, you pick a spot. So he's at least reading two guys on one route there. And then I think at the same time, you know, like I said, extending plays, he's looking for other options. We saw him make some dump down throws. I think you go back to that Alabama tape where they took away his running in the second half from the pocket. He picked apart a very, very, you know, pro-style defense, probably the closest thing you're going to see in college to an NFL defense. He did it with his arm from the pocket. And, you know, that wasn't just one read. Nick Saban's too good a coach to let his defense be beat like that by a quarterback who's picking one receiver pre-snap and winging it in there.
Now, how about Jake Locker, the quarterback out of Washington that really hurt his draft stock by going back for an extra year of college at Washington with a poor season on his part, and then as a team overall going only 7-6 and barely qualifying for a postseason berth, a bowl berth, I believe playing in the Holiday Bowl, correct?
Yeah.
Now, do you think that he's more of a athlete playing quarterback or a talented quarterback that is also an athlete at the same time? Because there's a lot of question marks that have been brought up with that recently in Jake Locker. What's your take on that, Hunter?
I think you go back to his junior season and you see a quarterback that has athletic qualities, and then you see the end result was no bowl game for Washington, no postseason, not a winning record. So Jake Locker, you know, as a senior says, okay, you know what, I've got to be more of a football player, more of an athlete playing quarterback because we have to win games because our goal is to get to the postseason and to have a winning record. So I think you see a little bit of a change in style of play where he says, I'm going to do what it takes to get the first down instead of being that traditional guy where I sit in the pocket and make every single read because his offensive line's letting guys through, his receivers aren't getting off jams. So I think his goal, when you ask him, when you talk to him, and when you look at the results, was to get to a bowl game, to have a winning season, and he did what it took to get there. So I think he changed his style a little bit. You talk about kind of a step back in his development, but I think it was more of a kind of an unselfish act where this guy obviously wasn't as worried about the money or being the number one pick, or he would have left. He wanted to win football games, and, you know, he did what he could as a football player to do that. Now, he's going to have to break some of those habits in the NFL, but I still think at the end of the day, he's a quarterback with great athleticism who can make the reads, who can make plays, who can win games for you with a better team around him.
Now, if I'm remembering right, he only completed 4 passes in one of those games he played at Washington in his last season of college ball. And wasn't it against Nebraska in which he had that poor of a game? And Nebraska, in my opinion, Hunter, is a very defensive-minded, oriented team that has some very high-quality defensive players, guys that are defensive playmakers at the collegiate level, but also at the NFL level. So if he's having that kind of trouble against Nebraska in their defense, don't you think he could have those same type of struggles in the NFL against real and tough NFL defenses? What's your take on that?
I think he certainly could. I think the good news is he won't have Jermaine Kearse and Devin Aguilar out at receiver, you know, against Prince Amukamara and Alphonso Denard, who are physical guys who like to get up in your face and jam you. And, you know, Locker's receivers are the kind of guys that apparently like to walk up to the line and be pushed around. So I think you look at it from both sides. Yeah, that was an NFL-quality defense, and his passing stats weren't great. But he got a lot done on the ground. He made some pretty big plays when he had to. You know, they were with his feet more often than not. But a lot of those throws were on target. They were just dropped. You know, his receivers aren't getting off the line. They're not getting into their routes at all. And you got a patchwork offensive line that's not giving you much time and receivers who aren't getting upfield, and that's going to affect your passing numbers. Now, he's got to play better than that as a passer in the NFL for sure, but he'll have better receivers. You know, he'll have a better offensive line. And so I think you look at both sides of that and say, you know, the competition will be better, but his teammates, his supporting cast will be as well.
Also be
and
better,
you're not,
right?
You're not asking him to win the Super Bowl day one.
So you have the Panthers also selecting Cam Newton with the number one overall pick, correct? We have that resolved.
Definitely.
Okay. How about number two now?
I think it's Von Miller. I like Darius. If it were me, I'd take Darius. You lose your top two tackles who weren't that good anyway. You get run all over and beat up right there through the middle. I think I would take Darius. But Miller's looking like the pick. I don't know that John Fox is that enamored with Robert Ayers, and he doesn't have much reason to be. And you don't know how Elvis Dumervil is going to perform coming back off injury and now moving back down to 4-3 defensive end after standing up and having such great success in the 3-4. So I think he wants to, you know, cut his odds here a little bit, and you look back at his history, the last time he got a superstar pass rusher, it kind of fixed his defense for good. I mean, Julius Peppers was that guy to where he could do a lot of things defensively. You know, he didn't have to have superior talent at every other position on that side of the ball. So I think he views Miller as the same kind of impact player as far as getting after the quarterback, and I just think Von Miller is the guy they're going to go after because of the difference he can make getting upfield as a pass rusher and hedge his bets with, you know, Ayers and Dumervil kind of question marks in this new defense.
Do you see any surprises occurring tomorrow night in the first round of the NFL draft? Any guys that are projected to be first rounders and to go in the top 10 maybe fall out and possibly all the way to the late first round or early second round? And then also, do you see any guys that will rise up, will sneak into the top 10 of this year's NFL draft also? So cover both ends for us. Which guys do you see falling out, and which guys do you see, you know, barely making the cut, coming out of nowhere to rise all the way or jump all the way into the top 10 of this year's NFL draft, Hunter? Talk about that a little bit for us.
If you're looking for a top 10 surprise, and you know, maybe it shouldn't be surprising, I think a lot of guys are underrating Daquan Bowers now. I don't think his knee is as bad as a lot of people are thinking, so I think there's still a great chance for him in the top 10. Outside of that, I think, you know, the top 15 players are all probably going to have a great shot at that top 10. I'm not sure we see a shocker like Tyson Alualu again this year up that high. I think Blaine Gabbert can fall down to number 10. I don't see him getting past the Redskins there, but I think that's further than a lot of people have him dropping. Muhammad Wilkerson out of Temple is a guy that's in the top 10 of a lot of big boards that I don't think is a first-round pick. I think he runs hot and cold on the field. I don't think he dominated MAC competition the way he should have. He was great at times, but, you know, there were other times that he was washed. He seemed to get lost in the play, seemed to kind of, you know, lose. I don't know if he lost interest. I don't know if he just didn't know what was going on, or if he was tired playing too many snaps. But I didn't see enough consistency out of a guy like Wilkerson in a class this deep at defensive line for me to want to spend the first-round pick on him, or you know, there's no spot in the draft where I say, okay, somebody's got to have Wilkerson over this other guy. So he's a big dropper. Phil Taylor, you know, some of the injury concerns, some of the inconsistency, the off-the-field stuff could drop as well. And Brooks Reed out of Arizona, the guy's got long blonde hair, and I really think that's 75% of the Clay Matthews comparisons. This was not a guy who was ever a first-round pick. Senior Bowl, and I was at the Senior Bowl, and I didn't see a first-rounder. I saw a good football player who can set the edge for you pretty well as a physical guy, but was never ultra-productive at Arizona. And the first step quickness, I don't see it as much as some guys do. So those, I think, would be some of the surprising drops. Jabal Sheard, a guy I've talked about before, I think could sneak into the first round. And then one more dropper, Kyle Rudolph, I don't think is a first-round pick. I think for the first time since 1999, I believe, will be without a tight end in the first round.
Yep.
I just don't like Rudolph. Again, same thing with Wilkerson. Where is it in the draft where somebody says, we got to have Kyle Rudolph instead of this other guy?
Do you still see Daquan Bowers, the defensive end out of Clemson, falling to the Lions at 13? Do you see him being draft gold for the Lions as a result of his injury concerns? You know, the situation with his knee, the uncertainty surrounding his knee issues, whether or not he will ever be able to regain full health with his knee. Will that drop him out of the top 10 and possibly to number 13 with the Lions pick there? What's your take on that?
You know, I think in a weaker defensive line class, this is a guy that's still a lot for the top 10 because I do believe some of the injury concerns are overblown. I think his pro day, outside of running an incredible 40-yard time, I think he was pretty good. This is an athletic guy. You look at how productive he was once he got some continuity at the defensive coordinator position. You know, then he was all world. So I think that there's still a great chance somebody wants Bowers early, and we're all kind of looking the wrong way on this. Now, to completely contradict myself, I haven't fallen all the way to Jacksonville, and there are a lot of stops along the way that the teams could pick him up or trade up and say, why is this guy falling? But at the same time, the class is stocked. A lot of the teams ahead of him, I think, have guys that they feel more comfortable spending such an early selection on. I do think that the first half of the first round is his floor in my mind. I don't think he falls into those late teens or the 20s. But at 16, I think Jacksonville would have a hard time passing him up. And like you said, Detroit, again, there's a definite chance there. I think Detroit goes best player available a lot. So that certainly makes him an option. But at this point, Detroit has to know that Jeff Backus is old. Godson Chairless is never going to be a left tackle. Jason Fox, the guy they got last year, is kind of an injured guy, beat-up guy who I don't think you want to, you know, stake Matt Stafford's health or his backside on Jason Fox being your long-term answer. So I think Detroit has to go offensive line, and that they'll have their choice of, you know, the second-best tackle on the board. So, yeah, Bowers could get pushed down just because of other needs.
Hunter, over or under 50% on the likelihood that a tight end does not go in the first round of this year's NFL draft. So therefore, I'm saying no tight end will be selected in the first round. Over or under 50% chance of that happening?
I'm going to go over. I think it's right at 60 is where I put it, so I'm not going far over. But Kyle Rudolph, to me, is the best tight end in this class, maybe, to some people, and I understand that. I understand his ability to get vertical and to be that seam threat receiver, and he's a pretty good blocker. So, but I look at him as kind of, you know, a jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none type guy who has an injury history, who in this class, I just don't see that spot where somebody says, damn, Kyle Rudolph is far and away the best player on the board. We have to get him. I mean, who is that needy for a tight end right now? So I just don't know that with some of the other project tight ends that we've seen lately, guys like Jimmy Graham, Aaron Hernandez, people didn't think was going to be that great. Some of these kind of, you know, upside guys like a Virgil Green, like a Jordan Cameron, these type of players, I think people will say, you know, we'll wait and take a risk on one of those guys, an athletic player. We don't need to take the injury risk in Rudolph and spend a first-round pick when we could get a much more solid player at a bigger position of impact.
Hey, Hunter, we have a caller on with us right now. From what area code, Brett?
978
area code. Who do we have on with us right now?
What's going on?
Who do we got?
My name's Jay.
Jay, what's up? What do you want to say to Hunter and I right now? What NFL draft topic do you want to bring up right now?
You guys talking about just top 10, or are you going outside?
Anything in the NFL draft that you want to talk about is on the table right now. What do you want to discuss with Hunter and I, or what question do you want to pose to either Hunter or I? Preferably Hunter, because he is the NFL draft expert on this show. Let me make that clear.
Okay. Where do you see some of the offensive tackles going in the mid-round? Principally like Pouncey and Costanzo, where you got him going. And there was one more, I think. But, I mean, it's a thick round for a defensive lineman. So everyone should get one, but
will the Pouncey brothers reunite in Pittsburgh together? What's your take on that, Hunter? Is that where he ends up, you think?
I don't think he falls far enough for Pittsburgh to have a shot at him, and I think it's more of kind of a neat thing that people like to think that these twins could be playing next to each other more than it is a realistic possibility. I think a team like the Kansas City Chiefs are getting overlooked for a guy like Pouncey. You know, Scott Pioli took Logan Mankins, and that worked out so well for him in New England when he was there. I think he wants to get that guy again. You got Brian Waters aging at one guard spot, and then you got, you know, Ryan Lilja at the other, and that guy I'm not super sold on, won't be around forever, and then Casey Wiegman in at center is getting old. So I think you add some youth inside and the interior of that offensive line. You keep that NFL's top ground game going with a great player in Pouncey there who, you know, Pioli was there when the Belichick kind of Florida love was still imminent, just not quite as wide known. So I think Pouncey looks great in Kansas City to me. I think Indianapolis is another team that needs to run the ball better, needs to protect Peyton Manning, and he can help fill a void there too. So I don't think he gets that far down the board.
Yeah, and I know New York likes him. What do you see? Do you think the Pats are going to go defensive line or offensive?
That's a great question. I think they'll try and do both. I think early on, a guy that not a lot of people are thinking is a Pats pick at 18 is Nate Solder out of Colorado. I know they canceled their visit with him recently, but, you know, that may have been to bring in another guy. They really needed to have their doctors check. You know, it's hard to tell what the Patriots are thinking no matter what they do. So I think, you know, getting younger and getting some more talent on that offensive line has to be a big priority in New England if you're going to keep Tom Brady healthy and keep that kind of, you know, running back by committee ground game going, you got to find some new bodies up front. And I like Solder. I like his strength. I like his upside. People are really down on him because he's not as polished, but that didn't stop Jason Smith from going second overall. It didn't stop Trent Williams from going fourth overall. They like these upside tackles, and I think all the way down at 18, Solder's good value. Another guy I really like for New England is Cameron Hayward, and I think he's got the length and that kind of core anchor strength that New England likes in their defensive ends. I think he provides a little more of a pass rush than your traditional 3-4, 5 tech guy. They really like those long players, and it's been quite a while since New England spent a first-round pick on the defensive line. I think Vince Wilford might have been the last time they did it a few years back. So I think they want to, you know, avoid another situation where Gerard Warren, an aging guy, is one of their options, and Brandon Dedrick, some of his off-field issues. You know, I'm not sure how he fits into the long-term plans. And Ty Warren, obviously, coming off an injury, you know, what's he going to be like? So I think Cameron Hayward and Nate Solder look like great picks. You know, you can flip the order of them at 17 and 28. But either way, I think they look to add one offensive lineman and one defensive lineman, with Mark Ingram at 28 being a wild card if they want, you know, one kind of one solid number one back.
Is this the year, Hunter, that the Patriots use their surplus of picks to trade up into the top 10? Or do they continue to stockpile their picks and use them to trade back into the later rounds and into future drafts, not just this year's draft, but into, you know, possibly next year's draft? What's your take on that? Because they do like to do that ever since Bill Belichick has been in charge in New England. That has really been their drafting method.
Yeah, I don't see them moving up still. I just still don't see that being their strategy, where they want to package and mortgage a whole lot on one guy. I think they love moving back. They love having this option every single year so that if somebody comes along that they have to grab, you know, they like Gerard Mayo a lot and they went up and got him. I don't know that there's a guy in this draft they feel like they have to have. And obviously that can change on draft day. If somebody they have a high opinion of starts falling, then maybe they you know, change it on the fly. But I'll take the safe pick here and say they still sit and look to move back before they look to move up.
You see,
anything else for Hunter, Jay?
Do you see Muhammad Wilkerson falling late first round? Or he looks like he could be a big work in progress, but still a great athlete.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that the potential is certainly there. A guy that can play inside for you as a 3-tech in the 4-3 and also out at 5-tech in a 3-4. But at the same time, you know, a guy that runs hot and cold on tape to me, looks lost at times, didn't dominate consistently in the MAC the way I would have liked to see a first-round player do. So I think if he's a first-round guy, it's much later than a lot of people do. I think it's in those last 5 picks. But I'm looking at him more as a second-round guy in such a deep defensive line class. I think you look at other guys who are just as talented but have performed better, have been more consistent before you go after a guy like Wilkerson. So I think at the top of the second, he's going to be available for somebody.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jay. Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
All right, Hunter. Well, that's about it for NFL Draft Special tonight. I hope you enjoyed being on with me throughout the duration of our draft special and kind of a mock draft of the first 10 picks in this year's NFL draft. It was a pleasure having you on once again also, Hunter.
Oh, hey, absolutely, Vito. Anytime. Always enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much for your time tonight, and enjoy the NFL draft tomorrow night and the 3-day process of it starting in primetime tomorrow night.
Oh, same to you, man. I can't wait.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it also. Thank you very much once again, Hunter. Have a good one.
Okay, Vito. You too.
All right, and that was our NFL Draft Special show tonight. I hope you enjoyed Hunter, Joe, and all the beat writers and bloggers that joined me to make the picks for their respective teams, teams with picks of 1 through 10. They made their selections, and I hope they were good enough for you guys tonight. I know I enjoyed having them on and then receiving great insight and draft analysis from Hunter Ansley of DraftSue.com and Joe Everett of the Fantasy Exchange and RookieDraft.com once again. Great stuff from them as usual. They definitely brought their A game tonight. I hope that the show overall was also an A grade for you guys tonight. And you can recap our mock draft of picks 1 through 10 by listening to the archived edition of this podcast. Also, by going on Twitter, we posted a couple picks on there before we kind of got a little bit bored with it, to say the least, and before we kind of started jumping around with the picks also. We flip-flopped a little bit too much, and it would have been too confusing for you guys probably to follow. We will still have a podcast on Friday, and also hoping to talk about the labor issue, the NFL once again, get an update on the lockout, the status of the NFL lockout. We'll probably have some NHL NBA playoff talk also on that edition of Sports Talk Soup. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you guys are also looking forward to the NFL draft, the start of it, round one, tomorrow night in primetime. I know I am. Hope you enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy tonight's edition, the latest in editions, and the greatest so far, hopefully, for you guys, edition Sports Talk Soup. Have a good night, guys, and enjoy the NFL draft tomorrow night. Good night now.